Hello and welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Amoral Bay Planning Commission. This is Tuesday, May 1st, 2018, and we're at the Veterans Memorial Building, 209 Surf Street. We have all members are present, so I'll call the meeting to order. Could we please have a moment of silence? Okay, thank you. Please stand, face the flag, and begin the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you very much. If it's okay with the other commissioners, I'd like to shift the agenda around a little bit so we can get right into our agendized meeting, B1 and B2. But first, I'd like to ask if there's anybody in the public that would like to speak on a general public comment, not on the agendized meeting. Okay, then please come forward. We'll do the public comment first.
Good evening, commissioners. Mr. Graham, Ms. Hubbard, my name is Carol Truesdale. I've been here since 1995. There is going to be coming before you the 3300 panorama tank removal position somewhere probably the May, June time frame. And on March 29th, I sent a message off to Ms. Hubbard here for regarding the negative unmitigated declaration. It's 5-1. I've not yet heard responses to my numerous questions as it pertains to the MND. The Morro Bay stakeholders have never been against the removal of these tanks. We've always postured that the removal meet and exceed the criteria of CEQA and the City of Morro Bay ordinances. This applicant has already defiled ordinances by entering the ESHA during nesting season, and we'd like to know how the city has handled these violations, as Commissioner Teft, God rest his soul, had asked. And another thing, I cannot stay for B2. I would like to speak on that at this time. Do I have your permission? I have a conflict I'm running late to. And it's very simple.
I was moving the items forward so that we would avoid this situation. Do you have written comments?
Basically, it's quick and simple, and it'll only take me a second to read.
Okay.
May I have your permission?
You know, I'm trying not to allow this, you know, because it gives favoritism for certain people, and I don't think that's fair. But go ahead and you have 30 seconds.
All right, sir. This is the second conceptual plan the city staff has brought before the Planning Commission asking for an exception to residential height limits in North Morro Bay. It's no secret that the new proposal zoning ordinance wants to change residential heights from 25 feet to 30, just as it proposes downtown Morro Bay be allowed to go 44. We have a serious parking situation in Morro Bay currently. I favor apartment buildings in R4 zones. However, these apartments, as opposed to averaging 1,200 square feet, not providing the required number of off-street parking spaces and violating the height limit, do not conform to our town ordinances or addresses in need. It appears to be creeping, as Commissioner Teff had said.
Okay.
Thank you.
For general public comment?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening or good afternoon, Bill Martini. 2 weeks ago I spoke on, this was on the working waterfront and as far as mixed area B. This is the area south of the boat launch. And I heard at that time with the LCP update that everything was going to pretty much, you know, was going to stay the same. When I read afterwards at GPAC, I noticed that there were some changes. So I'm a little confused. If Area B, if it's going to still be designated Area B, because in Area B, and this is on Main Street south of the boat launch, it states that it's mixed harbor use for recreational boating and fishing and commercial fishing, and that is supposed to be at the northern end. And yet in the update, it says that everything is allowed in that area. This is in the harbor zone. And so I'm not sure whether it's going to stay as is with the mixed harbor use that's currently designated in that area of the harbor, or whether you in turn are going to allow the entire bay to be for, you know, commercial, industrial, and, you know, as far as opposed to how it's currently designated. The other thing I wanted to mention is in the update, there's a zoning map that I feel needs to be corrected. And I know it's tough to see from here, but the current zoning map, and I could display it, but I'll just, shows the waterfront zoning to actually the land zoning to include a portion of the water itself. It has a lease site showing in the land side, and it shows two-thirds of that area is waterfront commercial and one-third as far as residential. Where the original zoning map, and this is hard for you to see, it's a very thin line of waterfront commercial and about 90% residential. So I think in any update, the current map needs to be corrected to show, you know, your existing map, because it's kind of incorrect, or it can give you a false impression that there's about 40% commercial and, you know, the remainder residential, where actually it's just a very thin line. So those are 2 points I want to make. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else for general public comment? Okay, seeing none, I'll close public comment. Scott, did you want to respond to any of the items brought up?
We do have the panorama project slated for June 19th. So that item will be coming for you. It's where it is currently. We don't have any. We're not putting any other items on the agenda. It'll just be for that item because of the interest from the neighborhood over there. So, and to speak to Ms. Truesdale's comments about we haven't responded. When you respond, when you provide comments toward an environmental document, we respond inside the environmental document when we bring it forward. So that's how those comments are all will be addressed inside the actual MND when we bring it forward to Planning Commission. As to Mr. Martini, we're not maintaining the mixed-use Area B moniker, but we're maintaining the zoning in that area as the same. And I'm not sure what he's referring to, the two different uses. He'd have to maybe, if he'd like, he can come down and talk to me. We can schedule some time to walk through it if you'd like. Happy to do that. The zoning map has in it and maintains moving forward, or will maintain moving forward. We don't have a zoning map for the new zoning designations. We haven't released that yet. That'll be part of Module 4. The zoning delineation in the area that Mr. Martin is talking about is by description. And so you have the zoning changes at the base of the bluff, and that's a physical location. The map may or may not be accurate at this point, but it's a physical location where the line is drawn. We'll try to make the map more accurate when we bring forward the new map, but it's really based on where the foot of the bluff is in those locations. Okay. Which is from there to residential going up. So.
Yep. Okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay, this time we'll bring forward agenda item B1. This is the... This is case number UPO-514-CPO-565 at 1169 West Avenue in Morro Bay. Do we have any ex parte communications? Anybody like to declare? Okay. At this point, let's have a staff report. Nancy?
Just in general, I wanted to mention that there has been some public comment, and copies of those are in the back of the room, as well as extra agendas and staff reports. I also wanted to mention in the staff report there is an error. Hopefully it's the only error. It's on page 7 above the photograph. It says that the house on the south side of the subject property was built in 1986, and that's not correct. It was 2010. So if we're ready to proceed.
Okay.
This is the location of the site. We could take a field trip and walk a couple of steps and see it. It's on West Avenue on the west side. An overview, the site is 8,610 square feet. It's a narrow, long lot, 42 feet wide and 206 feet long. The home proposed is 3,988 square feet on two levels. The lower level has two patios on the west side, 363 square feet, and a 638 square foot rooftop deck on the second floor on the west side. The home entry, because of the long, narrow lot, is similar to the other homes designed in that area. It's on the side of the property. So this is about midway on the north side. This home also has a pool courtyard, and that's on the opposite side, about midway through the lot. It also has 1,000 square feet of enclosed garage and storage area. This shows you the zoning of the site. It's duplex residential. It's in a PD zone. It's in the Beach Street specific plan area, and it needs to comply with bluff development standards. It's not in the coastal zone appeals jurisdiction. This is the R2 zoning ordinance standards, and this outlines the standards for all of the front, side, rear lot coverage. This proposed project complies with all of those setback standards, including the bluff edge setbacks for ground floor construction and second floor construction and height of roof deck fencing. This is just another aerial to show you proximity and view from this property looking west. The floor plans are large, so I cut them in half. So this is the west half of the site. I also colored in areas that are not living space, so you can see decks around the pool. In the top right is the entryway, that's the front door, and then the back area are covered patios. And this is the other half of the lower level floor plan. Also colored in is driveway space, including the top right, that's a carport, but it's open. Second floor plan, same thing. The gray areas are roofs for the lower floor. So this shows you the area of the second floor on the west side, and it's set back appropriately from the bluff. This is the east side of the second floor. And this is front and rear elevations. And front and rear renderings. And if you note the photograph for the front perspective shows the security fencing. Initially, this was noticed with a different rendering photo that showed a front fence and garage gate, and the applicant changed that to this solution for securing the front door. This is the north and the south elevations. And this is the condition on the northerly property line. There is an existing home constructed in 1925 that has an existing block wall on the property line, and the home is set back about 6 inches from the property line with viewing windows on the south side. So going back to this, you can see in the top elevation on the right side, there are very few windows looking that direction. They're very small so that we can maintain some privacy between the homes, not we, the applicant. This is a proposed street view showing the home next to the house I mentioned earlier that was built in 2010, and on the right side is the house we just looked at that was built in 1925. This is a view of the center courtyard that's on the south side of the house. And this is a neighborhood overview. The existing single-family homes along the west side of West Avenue range in size from 1,230 square feet to 3,611 square feet. Other homes on West Avenue have a similar design because of the long, narrow lots. And the ages of the homes on West Avenue range from 1925 to the current 2018 proposal. And that concludes the staff presentation. We've included resolutions with conditions for approval.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions for the staff? Joseph?
Just in the calculation of lot coverage, of course it includes the habitable part of the house. It doesn't include the covered patios, and what about the garage? Is that in the calculation of lot coverage?
I believe it does not include covered patios.
It does not include covered patios. It would include oddity of the way our lot coverage calculation works, and it's something we're fixing in the update. It does, if we had decks that were extending into the outside of the setback, because you can cantilever into a setback, it would count the portion that goes into the setback. We don't have any of those in this scenario, so those don't count right. Which is, again, an oddity of the way our code is written and the way that it's been interpreted over time. In fact, I have a very confusing memo, I guess, that was done several years ago to explain how that's calculated. It was supposed to help clarify, sort of confusing in its own right. So, but anyway, that's how it's worked. So garages do count, obviously, but the covered decks do not.
Jesse, any questions?
Is there a pool on one of the other new houses on West, adjacent to the bluff? When I was looking at the various satellite images, it looks like there might be a pool closer to the bluff. I couldn't really tell. It looked like maybe a two or three houses to the south.
I'm not sure.
So this would be the only. This would be the only house on with the pool on the bluff.
And on that portion of West, I believe so.
Okay.
Mike.
Yeah, Nancy, can you just explain the city position about drainage for houses on West Street? Do they drain into West Street by requirement?
Away from the bluff into the street, correct.
That's a requirement of our code.
Right. And then the other thing I was going to ask is the adjacent neighbor with the lot line issue. In theory, does our building code require them to come back and sprinkler or put fire protection on the window that they're exposing the neighbor?
No.
No?
You know, with the city's one water policy and this guy trying to build a pool right there, is there any, how many gallons is the pool, just out of curiosity?
You don't know? Unclear. The applicant might know.
Okay. And then the other thing is it's kind of related. The last meeting we had here, we had an issue with a gate right next door. I noticed the gate's still there, and that was a condition not to have that there. So, you know, and when you look at this posting, it shows a fence there, so it's a little misleading to the public.
I mean, we'd be moving toward having the gate and fencing brought into compliance with the requirements, so...
But that was like last meeting. They got a gate up there, so.
So we'll be having them remove those things.
Like
yeah.
Soon, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's a couple properties like that on West Street. Okay, at this time we'll open public comment for item B1. Would the applicant care to make a presentation?
Thank you, Chairman Lord. Chuck Stevenson. I do have a PowerPoint I need to pull up on and use the. Thank you. Okay. Good evening, Chairman Lohr, members of the commission. I'm Chuck Stevenson. I'm representing Darlene Reeves and Jerry Taylor, the applicants. They're not able to be here this evening, though. I wanted to just have a few remarks. I appreciate Nancy's presentation. She covered some of the details very well, and I wanted to just point out a few things that I wanted to mention relative to the design itself. I've designed several homes on West Avenue in past exchanges with your commission. I know there was interest in looking at some diversity of design, and so that's what we really focused on this one, and at the same time recognizing with Ms. Ford's home next door, a flat roof and a white building, we were trying to find a bridge with compatibility. And Ms. Reeves also was real interested in having a more sort of Mediterranean design, if you will, and a sort of a white sort of low flat roof buildings that are common in some areas in the Mediterranean. So this was her desire as well, to try to find some bridge between design styles. This is a really unusual lot, 42.4 feet wide and 200 feet long, so it's difficult to get a home that works. And so much of the square footage of the area is taken up in hallways and just trying to get access. But if you take a look at the floor plan, they're reasonable size rooms, three bedrooms with a recreation room. It's not an unusual home in terms of that regard. One concern of mine from a design standpoint is to not have a two-car garage staring at you in the face. And so part of the design solution was to split that garage into, recess one back quite a bit, create a, it looks like a carport, it's more of an architectural feature to kind of create a sense of depth to that area. So that effort, I think, really pays off well for the design, in my view. The pool is an exercise pool for Ms. Reeves. It's only 5 feet deep. It's about 10 feet wide. She needs that for health reasons, and there is no prohibition against having a pool in Morro Bay based on water. I think other than that, I'd be available for comments. I know there has been some public correspondence you received, and I would like an opportunity to come back to the podium and respond to any questions that may come up.
Okay. If we have questions, we'll let you address them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please come forward, state your name. You'll have 3 minutes. You might need to pull the mic.
Good evening. Karen Beckman, Morro Bay, and I'm speaking for Joyce Ford of Morro Bay. We welcome our new neighbor and thank Community Development for the consideration regarding my adjacent property as expressed in this proposed development. I acknowledge that my house is nonconforming as it was built in 1925 and has been in my family since the early 40s, and it is my home. I expect and hope to live in it for the remainder of my life. A guiding principle of community development is that all new and remodeled development fit into the small town scale of the community while preserving and strengthening the unique small coastal town image and character of Morro Bay. With this, I would like to speak to the neighborhood compatibility of the proposed project. Many of us were concerned about the hugeness of the south adjacent house at 1155 West Street, built in 2010, currently the largest house on West Street at 3,600 square feet. We had been told by Community Development the design and build of that house would not again be allowed. Yet it appears that the mass and scale of the proposed is a repeat, and not even close to the other two recent builds of 2017 at 1149 and 1147 West Street, both at 2,900 square feet. How was the proposed allowable build size determined? The actual footprint is 3,800 square feet with an overall size of 4,881 square feet. And to be painted polar white would reflect sunlight and produce blinding glare in the neighborhood. If the proposed is built at the maximum height for bluff development at plus 25 feet with an overall size of 4,881 square feet, how is it then considered of a lower profile than the adjacent newer homes along the west side of West Avenue, per the staff report, page 7. Regarding the floor plan, an exterior stairway access to the second story has a master bedroom and game room showing sinks and refrigerators which could be converted to kitchens and used as vacation rentals. Will the proposed AC unit within the adjacent side yard setback be located away from my house and windows? I will need future access to the plaster surfaces and windows on the south side of my house for maintenance. Is it possible to prohibit the installation of a fence or wall up against the side of my house to grant periodic access to maintain and repair windows and stucco siding? I am concerned that the proposed drainage system will negatively affect the foundation of my house, as there is no indication for control relating to adjacent properties. Will the subsurface drainage for stability required by building be part of the major drainage system? If not, how would this system affect my property? Further concern is that my property will be damaged or adversely affected by machine-driven soil compaction, and I ask for control measures to provide protection against undermining my house and foundation. Finally, does the required automatic fire sprinkler system replace a firewall in the kitchen, as the kitchen would be located less than 5 feet from my house? Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please. Go. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Please state your name again.
Again?
Yeah, Bill Martini. I have been in the last person's house years ago. It's a real classic 1920s, actually a piece of history in Morro Bay. So I think, I don't know how this impacts it, but I think you need to consider, you know, the impact. It's kind of a low slung, almost like a Spanish feel to it. And I know how that is when you have something 25 feet tall, and it may have buffer, but you still are going to be looking down on it, and all those side windows will be affected. So if there's any way to soften the design just on her side, it would be something that would be well worth it, I think, for protecting. In fact, it's just across the road here, and it's a real classic if you're inside. I don't know if I was mistaken or not, but was that a tandem to garage or two separate one-car garages? Because I think with a lot 40-something feet wide, if that was tandem parking, that wouldn't make sense for a house this large to actually have tandem parking. It's very difficult. And it ends up half of that turning into a storage or laundry room and only one car parking there. So if it's two separate garages side by side, but if it's tandem, you might think about accommodating a two-car garage. So I may have viewed the actual plans when it came on, but I would recommend a two-car garage as opposed to tandem parking if that's the case. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Would anybody else like to speak to this item? Okay. Please step forward. Chuck, was it?
Thanks, Chairman Lord. Chuck Stevens. And again, just wanted to respond to a few things. I'm a little, first of all, I'm very supportive of Joyce Ford's house. It's a wonderful house. I've been in it, met her. A little surprised that she brings up the matter of maintaining the windows and walls, because I spoke to her about that, and I spoke to the owner about that, and Ms. Reeves is more than happy to allow her access to maintain that wall. Ms. Reeves is not going to grow any landscaping that would interfere with that, so very respectful of the history of that home, and for Ms. Ford as well. Certainly, we want to be very careful whenever we do foundations along that side, very sensitive to the fact that we have that older classic house nearby. So extra measures will be taken to be very careful about doing footings in that area, very careful. We do have a geotechnical engineer that will be on the site doing inspections when foundations are dug and signing off on those. So we're very, very sensitive and aware of that issue. As far as the drainage goes, there was questions earlier. On each one of these homes that I've done on West Avenue, the drainage does all get engineered, approved by the city, and out to West Avenue. The only water that's allowed on the property is what falls on it on the back part, and we try to manage that with pervious materials and so forth. So very sensitive to that issue. This is not a tandem parking situation. There are two bays. Ms. Reeves does have a classic car that she wants to park in a tandem arrangement, but there are two car parking that she can do side by side. I know that there's been maybe a little confusion on this, on the gate, the idea of a driveway gate. That's been eliminated. Ms. Reeves would like to know, and I'm not sure what the status of this with the future zoning ordinance, if this will be addressed, if gates at all will be addressed, driveway gates will be addressed in the upcoming zoning code. There are regulations in other communities that I found that regulate those and have specific setbacks and heights and standards. What we don't have in Morro Bay is anything in our policy documents or zoning that regulates those. So we would like to, I know there's a condition that prohibits it, but would appreciate your commission again discussing your reasoning and concern about driveway gates for the record on this one. Ms. Reeves is not proposing to do one, but if the zoning code changes in the future and if there are some provisions for some kind of gate that's totally visible, low, but you know, protected, provides protection, then we would like to be able to come back without having to amend this plan, which is very expensive and time-consuming, but rather work with a future ordinance if that's if it's provided for. So just some language in the condition might be such that if the future zoning were changed and a driveway gate were provided for, the planning director may have some authorization. I know it's a lot of words, but there is concern. Ms. Reeves does have small pets, and she does have concern for security on West Avenue. I think those were my only responses to what I heard.
Okay. Thank you. I've got a couple questions that I've heard and read on some other correspondence. On the geotechnical report for this site, is there a requirement for subsurface compaction?
Oh yes.
Yeah. So you're going to over excavate and then recompact?
Yes, just like we've done on the other ones. That is a standard requirement.
Okay. How far are you going to have to over-ex on this?
I believe it's 30 some inches generally.
Okay.
It's remove that material, put it back in, compact it in 6-inch lifts to get a uniform base.
Okay. And how are you going to monitor the adjacent homes?
Well, our geotechnical engineer will be on site. That's a very critical thing. We want to be sure that there's no disturbance of those foundations at all. They might have to be hand dug. The issue is what will machinery do in that area relative to those buildings? And that's, I'm not so concerned about the one to the south,
right?
More for Joyce's house.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about the compaction on that. Mm-hmm. You know, especially a vibrator.
Very aware of that. Very aware of that.
Okay. Then also about the color that's been brought up a couple times. I think that's a very, very, very stark white. Even the adjacent home is kind of an off-white. Are you dead set on having that polar bear white?
Ms. Reeves, I've had this discussion with her, and she is very set on this, on a white house. Now, there are shades of white, mm-hmm. and I could talk to her about maybe taking it a tone down and keep it white, but she's very set on that. That's her dream.
Okay. Do we have any other questions for the applicant? Michael?
Mr. Stevenson, did you consider any water reclamation or gray water or rain barrels for the house? This is one of those projects that there's so much money being spent on it, and yet some of the simplest things to help offset some of our problems aren't being addressed. Is there anything like that in here?
Well, as far as rain catchment, we certainly could. I don't want to. It's going to be difficult in terms of the site because it's very constrained. And how many, and what how many to be effective? I mean, I've got four at my house in San Luis Obispo, and I could have eight more. But where to put them, how they look, is a problem. And so I would say we would be certainly willing to do that, and she may want to, in order to reclaim some water for irrigation. That would certainly encourage, if your commission wants to encourage that, or look for opportunities to do that, that would be fine.
That's all.
Richard?
You mentioned a discussion for the fence before. And you used to sit on the Planning Commission in San Luis, right?
I'm on the City Planning Commission right now. I'm vice chairman.
Okay. So when you write conditions, you know, when you make your decisions, you expect those conditions to be adhered to. And if they're not, it kind of is disrespectful to the commission. And that's kind of what happened with this other project of yours. And now you're asking for another fence that already said that it's not allowed. Okay? And so having this, talking in circles on this, is not only a waste of our time,
Richard,
but staff's time. Hang on for a second.
Do you have a question?
No, I'm making a comment here. And
well,
it's also a waste of taxpayers' money.
Richard, this is for questions. I'm sorry. Okay. Questions?
Did I hear the property to the north, did I hear that 19 circa 20 property is 6 inches from the property border?
Yes.
And are you contemplating putting a fence?
No.
Along that? No. So there will be no fence?
No. We've done everything we can to work with Joyce in terms of keeping all fenestration on that side so that she protects her privacy. Okay. It's been important.
Okay. Jesse?
So pools inevitably leak. And on the bluff, it would be problematic, if not catastrophic, if that were to occur. What provisions are you putting in place to mitigate any potential leaks and soil problems coming from the pool?
To be honest with you, Commissioner, I haven't dealt with that. I'm assuming it won't leak. So I don't know. We can certainly address that with our pool contractor and take whatever measures are necessary to assure that won't happen. But I'm not familiar with the technique that would, or pool construction enough to answer your question.
Okay, thank you very much.
One more
question. On the AC, it looks like there's a compressor located adjacent to the neighbor's house or neighbor's wall. Does that compressor have to stay there?
We can find a better location.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll work with Joyce on perhaps a better location for that. But
okay, and would you be willing to have a condition here that would grant maintenance access to the neighbor?
I'm not sure about that. I think we're willing to. All we need is some notice, a week or two's notice. As long as Ms. Reeves is at the house, she would want to be sure she's there. Mm-hmm. She's not. She's going to be living full time. But I'd rather keep it out of a condition of approval. Certainly willing to work with her on any time she needs to get in there. We just need some notice.
Okay, great. Any other questions?
Yeah, one more question. Okay. Do you have a central vacuum system in this house?
I don't know that one's planned for yet.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
And I did want to just, with all due respect, I didn't mean to offend Commissioner Sadowski. What my concern has been is that I've looked and asked staff repeatedly where in the zoning code is a prohibition against a driveway gate. Where in the policy is one, and there's been no findings for those. So as a planning commission, you know, your job is to administer the general plan and the policy and in zoning ordinances and not set policy. And I'm just looking for some link to something where if we came in with a low gate set back from the street that was attractive, why not? And I'm just, that's all I'm curious
okay,
about.
Thank you very much. Okay, at this point, I'll close public comment on this item, and we'll see. Do we have another? Okay, we haven't closed public comment, so Betty, if you wish to address this.
Thank you, Betty Winholtz. It's difficult for me to get here because of my job, so I appreciate
that. We shifted the agenda around.
So did you?
We're going to try to bring the items forward earlier in the meeting so we can keep the general comments separate from the particular comments for the
for the items. So
I'm addressing the Bluff property
now. The Bluff property off West Street.
Okay, great. So I sent an email to the planner asking several questions and did not receive any answers back. And so I'm hoping that either you got some answers or you will ask those questions for me. And I think primarily they were about what I was hearing about the pool, my concern about having been cut into the Bluff from the property below, and what impact that's going to have with cutting in to a swimming pool, and how that is just going to, I just can't imagine what the potential catastrophic thing could happen there. And so there may be ways to fix that. And so I hope that's being addressed. I was concerned about retaining your authority in terms of a specific plan, that you get to see the drainage plan, that you get to see the landscaping plan, and that that's not diverted or wait until later after when they're ready for the building permit. That seems to me at a higher level of review, you all get to see that because that's why we have the overlays. So that was looking at your authority. And then the fencing on the front, I don't know if you've already addressed that. There was the potential for a little fence on the Bluff, and I didn't know where that stood. And I can't remember all of them, but I think those were most of them. And I think you have a copy of my questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. Bringing it back to the commission. Scott, do you wish to address any of the items that were brought up?
As far as the wall that's being constructed down on Front Street, I mean, their engineer for this project will take that into consideration when they bring back construction documents, as will their soils engineer. That would apply both to that, to the overall construction for the house as well as for the swimming pool.
Yeah, and I'd just like to comment that the swimming pool is only 5 feet deep. It's well beyond the angle of repose of...
Correct.
Of that Bluff, so I don't think there will be any problem geologically with that.
I wouldn't, as far as the drainage plans, that's not something normally the Planning Commission looks at. That's something that's normally developed after you've had all the engineering done for the project and those types of things, and they're submitted at building. So that's sort of normally how that happens. Again, requirements for drainage for this property are specifically dealt with in the Bluff standards. For the zoning code, which is housed in, I believe, section 1745.040, and requires drainage to be directed out towards the street.
The fence along the Bluff property? Is that
I'm looking for that. Hold on a second.
Can I interject for a second?
Sure.
I'll get to the fence in a second, but I wanted to mention that the position and the placement of the heating and air conditioning system is in condition 16.
Oh, okay.
It needs
that.
To be in an enclosed room, and that's what they proposed, and that's what is in the condition. The drainage condition or drainage situation is addressed in planning condition number 18, and it requires that they provide a copy of their drainage plan when they do building permit submittal to both neighbors on the north and the south, and provide evidence of notification of the planning department that has been done. And then finally, the geotech report, there's condition 11 that requires the geotechnical engineer to take consideration of current existing conditions. And that's because the original report was done before the development at the base of the Bluff. So I wanted to make sure that when they got to building permit drawings that they had an updated report and analysis to go with that.
Okay.
And as far as development within the Bluff buffer and Bluff setback area, that's addressed in section 1745.070A1. Allows for development on the Bluff face, actually. So there's no prohibition for fencing in that location.
Okay.
And I think what going back to trends, I think what the Planning Commission has traditionally required, I think this project follows that, is the edge of the Bluff standpoint, you haven't set back the fencing 5 feet so as not to have that sort of dramatic look from below. It steps it back a little bit. I think that's been the tradition that we've had on at least the recent homes that were approved by the Planning Commission.
Okay. Okay, Richard, do you have any comments or questions? I mean, Joe, I'm sorry. Like I said, I was going to need help tonight.
All right, you want me to start off?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and start off.
I'm particularly concerned about that house to the north, because I do regard, even though I'm a recent arrival to Morro Bay, I really regard that as a noteworthy landmark of the city, and really wish to preserve it and in all its glory and eccentricity. With respect to the design of the applicant, I appreciate that the it does have a flat roof, a lower profile. And I like the treatment of the garage doors, so that you're minimizing the sort of dominating garage door at the front of the house look, which none of us find very attractive. It is a large house. I guess one of the questions we're going to have to resolve here is it not in keeping with the houses in the neighborhood? Is it too large? Is it roughly equivalent? More on that to come. The white color, as requested by the applicant, seems pretty stark and likely, I suppose, to increase the sort of the more massive look of the house. I for one am not a particular fan of great expanses of stucco on a large house. That's my taste, but I realize I'm not here to impose my taste on other homeowners, but I wish that it were other than entirely stucco. So again, the issue, I suppose, for me, will be whether it is really compatible with the existing neighborhood, and I'll be interested in what the opinion of my fellow commissioners is. I am wondering what the policy is here for an adequately sized house. I mean, by all the objective standards, the applicant seems to have met them. So what sort of discretion do we have when the objective standards are met, but there is still a sort of subjective notion that perhaps even though objective standards have been met, it's not quite compatible with the neighborhood?
I mean, you have discretionary authority over the project, and part of what you're doing with that discretionary authority is determining whether the project fits into the neighborhood, neighborhood compatibility. And so, I mean, from a staff standpoint, there was concern related to the size, for sure. I mean, it's much larger than any other homes. It's much larger than any home that we've had that's come forward recently. I would say, the one location in town, there might be others, but that you could have a house that's this size might be in this location. It's just because you won't notice the size of it so much because it's a very narrow lot. And it's not in the center of another neighborhood standing out on, that you could standing out in a point or a corner or something like that where it would be much more obvious. That being said, it's quite a bit larger than the other homes that are over there. And so, I mean, that's why you didn't see a lot of narrative in the staff report from staff on that was because, yes, it's large, probably one of the larger homes that we've seen in recent times, since I've been here anyway. Again, because of the nature of the lot, the narrowness of it, its expression from the street is going to appear similar to the other ones that are there, and probably similar from the bluff down below of the other houses that are there, because you're only going to see the very back of it from the bluff, from below the bluff. So we brought it forward without much narrative and figured the Planning Commission, this is kind of in your wheelhouse, and you'd weigh in and state what you thought about its compatibility or lack thereof with the neighborhood.
And I thank you for that, because in a general sense, to my view, it looks similar to the houses that are already there. However,
as it stands in contrast to the last house to the north, it's monumental. And I think that's a point worth considering. And then a couple other things that came forward out of the discussions here. I'm always concerned beyond the current owners of the property, what sort of problems we create for subsequent owners. So with respect to the ability to maintain the property to the north, I would really hate to see some difficulties arise between neighbors and sometime in the future with different owners and a fence go up. So I would really want something to run with the land that said that property to the north had the ability somehow to maintain their portion of the property and really not want a subsequent owner to. With respect to the fence, I think I heard it clearly, but any fence that goes up at the front of the property, the front of the property facing the street, will comply with the, I believe it's a 4-foot fence if it's transparent or a 3-foot fence of solid, so that's not an issue. And then the pool. I hadn't really thought about, again, the pool as a problem decades from now and the leak and water building up behind those walls that border the bluff. So, we should really look closely at that. I'm not quite sure what we do, but we want to make sure that there isn't a problem years down the line. Because I'm familiar with pools and leaks and well, and they're so slow moving that they're sometimes difficult to even perceive. But suddenly you have a major problem. I don't know. I want to hear from what the rest of the commission has to say.
Okay, Jesse.
Yeah, so this is a difficult one. With the restrictions on the narrowness of the lot, I realize that the design kind of probably designed itself. I mean, you had to just do what you had to do to make what you had to make work. I guess if I had any comments, they would be, I really didn't understand how the lot coverage worked, because when I was doing the math, it just didn't seem to add up. But now that you're saying that certain things don't count and certain things do, that kind of makes sense. It did seem like it was over 50%. I think I came up to like 57 or 58 by the time I was doing my math. I really think the pool is a bad idea. I'm kind of thinking, and what I do for a living, I mean, I'm thinking worst case scenario. So in a seismic event, that pool cracks, it finds a way down the bluff, and half the backyard goes with it. What does that do to the people on the other side, on the downhill slope of that? So I'm not in favor of that pool, just for the record. So the neighbor to the north, I realize they have a legal non-conforming setback. While I do respect the property rights of the Reeves, I do agree with Joe that we should protect the ability to maintain that legal non-conforming setback with a provision to not obstruct their ability to maintain their residence as needed. I think that's all I have.
Okay. Richard.
To me, this is a pretty glaring example of how a neighborhood incompatibility. To me, I don't know about Mediterranean, but it kind of looks West Palm Beach-ish to me. And the massing of the house and the way that it's going to sit on the bluff, I think this is a project that I think that needs to be revisited as far as a neighborhood compatibility. And I also am concerned about any pools, especially on the bluff there, and also the, you know, we talked about the drainage before, Scott. We on other jobs on West Street, how they drain. And I'm going to repeat, and I know Public Works, I already know about what they say, but when we have a drainage that goes on West Street and the way it's drained, that is something that Public Works should take into account more consideration, especially since they're talking about inflow and infiltration of sewer lines right there and the way that that drains into West Street with the way they do it, you know. And I'm not saying that you could do something else, but at least we should really make sure that that sewer line is in good shape so we don't reduce INI. That's something that you could just talk to Rob Leivick about. So that's the drainage issue. And then also, but my opinion is that it doesn't fit into the neighborhood.
Michael.
Well, I wish the neighborhood looked more like this one than the Spanish-style ones. The one thing about this is I think it's a stealth big house. I can't comment on why someone needs a house this big. That's kind of out of my purview. But if you are going to have a house this big, by splitting up the massing into these narrow pieces and having the setbacks for the upper floors so far away, I think this house is going to look significantly smaller and have less of an impact on the street than any of the places to the south. And I think it'll be similar to the water. I think it's actually going to be the nicest one up there in terms of what it looks like from the water. I don't have any trouble with white. I wish we had more white, less blue in town. Blue is my least favorite color, especially in the backgrounds up there. I have concerns about things like the pool, more from an ethical water point of view than I do from the owners taking on a huge risk. This is an insurance issue that they're going to have to be aware of, and just like the mechanics of building a house this large in this kind of soil condition with the pilings and vibration, that's really no different than we'd have any other place around here. I'm not crazy about stucco, but we don't have a discretion to change palliative materials, and all the houses on the street are stucco. I think that when the east side of West is done at some point, the projects will be larger, and they'll seem like this. I think when the adjacent owner to the north at some point chooses either them or legacy down the line, we'll see something large there as well. So I don't see much. I am concerned about access to the adjacent house. I'm kind of shocked we don't have building issues about 6 inches off the property line with all those windows, because my understanding of the building code is that would trigger fire shutters on those windows. And it was interesting that in the testimony, the person was asking about protection of their property from the kitchen 5 feet away when their windows are on the property line. And I would say, what are you doing to protect my property? The last piece is the lack of a site plan scares me a bit, because if we look at the rendering, I don't know if you can go back to the one that shows the property to the north. I'm not 100% sure exactly what I'm seeing and how much we have. Can you go back? Couple, or maybe Mr. Stevens. It's the one other one you have from the front. Yeah. It's actually in the packet that we have as well. One thing, if we find it, it appears that there's a white wall that goes the length of the property, and I'm not sure if that's a stylized version of the existing wall of the neighbor to the north or if that was a new wall that was being placed in there. Yeah, not that one. No, it's actually a rendering. It's in the packet that we have, but that's it. So that wall to the right, is that a new wall or is that a stylized version of the adjacent north property wall?
That is not a new wall, and as far as my understanding is we're leaving that wall the way it is, not touching it with paint or anything.
And the other thing I guess I would say is this appears that the two garages actually wide down and narrow a bit as we're getting toward the street, which leaves a larger landscaped area shown to the north as well as one to the south. And I think that's pretty significant because I think if you look at the Google Earth images of the adjacent properties, they're almost all paved 100%. I don't know how they got away with that much solid coverage. But I would like to condition it that we have something similar to the amount of paved space that we see in the rendering that was submitted, and that we don't back away from that and pave the whole front like the adjacent one to the south is. And I the nature of the landscaping, I think it would be an interesting thing to see down the line, but I'm not going to necessarily be concerned about conditioning that.
And we actually have a landscape plan. It was submitted. It's crude because but it meets the criteria. It just wouldn't show well because it's such a long, narrow lot.
That's all I have.
Okay. My concerns are the mechanical noise to the adjacent neighbor. So as long as that's conditioned, you know, that they that compressors and stuff are, you know, hot water, tankless hot water heaters are not, you know, adjacent to the neighbor to the north. Also, I would like to see some kind of a compaction monitoring, you know, during compaction have, you know, if it's, you know, if the neighbor complies to the north to have access for the during compaction, especially close to the property line, that there's a regiment to monitor the effects of compaction on the neighboring house. I'm not worried about the pool as much. You know, I don't think there's as much water, even if it's not going to be the breaking of the LA dam, even if it does leak. I think it'd be a slow motion item, and it's 5 feet. It's, you know, 8 feet across or something. If, you know, she's taking on the liability of any damage that caused by that, but I just don't see that as a major issue other than the water use. And I think, you know, that's what they're going to have to do, you know, to deal with. So, you know, I may be wrong on that, but I just don't think it is as a major issue. It's well back from the bluff. It's not at the angle of repose, so, you know, water gushing down isn't going to create a rivulet and, you know, it'll suck all the houses down. The geology is not there to support that, but I'm not big one way or the other. I'm not bothered by the mass or the scale. I think the massing was done extremely well to articulate both facades, and the mass of the building is basically in the interior between those facades. And so I think this is one of, you know, big houses are not bad just because they're big, as my thoughts on it. And so I'm not as bothered by it, but what I am bothered by is I didn't see any direct layout, or it was hard to tell about where the adjacent houses are on this, regarding the setbacks of this property. Seems this property is brought further forward to the street than the adjacent properties by quite a bit. And so part of our compatibility issues, we're trying to keep houses, you know, pretty much lined up as far as how the setbacks from the street. So do you have a better slide that shows that?
You know, I didn't bring the slide because I thought it would be hard to see, but there is a site plan that shows a little bit of outline. I didn't copy it.
Yeah, a little bit, but I can't see the one to the south. And then I'm bothered by the polar white. You know, it's going to make the house stand up. Even the adjacent house has a tinted, you know, has a slight more earth tone to the white than this would be. And there's quite literally a million whites. And so I think a more earth tone approach to that would soften this house considerably. And I do believe that we should condition this to grant a maintenance access to the adjacent property, so that with proper notification and equal compliance, or equal notification, that they can work up terms between them to be able to keep their house in good order. Okay, I think that's my major consideration. I would love to see solar panels and, catchments on this and stuff too, but, we don't have the ability to regulate that at this point. And once again, seeing as we didn't get a very good landscape plan, having concrete instead of permeable pavers or something, I think we need to have the hardscape be permeable rather than poured concrete. So are we ready for conditions, or are we ready for motions? Okay. Richard?
One thing just occurred to me.
Sorry, I did it again.
Will you stop that?
Joseph. I apologize, Joseph.
We spent a fair amount of discussion looking at the east and west facades and the articulations and breaking up the facades. And in typically we look at the front and the back of the houses. Why? Because the house is situated between two existing houses and you can't really see the sides. But here, I realize, you can really see that northern side facade, its whole length. And to me, that looks like it's a massive, unbroken up kind of facade, which we really don't want to encourage in Morro Bay, but which we often let pass. Why? Because it's difficult for it ever to be seen. But here, it's not. And it's all the more contrasting because of the age of the house to the north and the particular adobe Mexican style. I, if I'm standing there at that corner looking past the 1925 house, looking at that facade, I'm going to think that's very massive and not what we should be encouraging. That's my comment.
Okay. I had another thought. I meant to bring this up earlier. I forgot. Once we approve this, we lose control of solar. It seems very important to me to put solar on the roof, but not to put it where it's visible from the Embarcadero. So, with a flat roof, they would have to angle the array to get it to the proper. And I know once we approve this, we lose some of the building and the state mandates kind of they take over. We lose control. So, I don't know if it's possible, but if it is, I would like to condition it that any solar array not be visible from the Embarcadero.
I think that's easily done. And literally, a 5 or 10 degree slope is all you need on the solar arrays. Okay, so where do we stand? Are we ready to apply some conditions or?
Hey Jerry, I got a question for
okay,
you.
Okay,
you were talking about a maintenance for the neighbor.
Yes.
Is that going to be an easement that you're going to require there? So access easement?
No, I don't think I don't think we need to bring it up to the level of an easement. I think we just need to. I would see it as a condition of the property, a condition on the development, on the CUP, that they, with consultation and notification, that they would have access to do maintenance on that facade, on the northern property. So, Scott, have you seen those before? Or?
Because that's
like you mean like an agreement type thing?
Yeah, either agreement or just a condition.
The only way they ever would use them, you know, in the past really is for larger pieces of property. They were recorded documents that were, you know, they didn't want to go with an easement because an easement grants you rights, you know, any time of the day, which I don't think is appropriate probably for this type of scenario. But if they were to record agreement between the two, then they could spell out the week's notice, that type of thing, you know, for it. And so then they could have that recorded.
Okay. Yeah, I think I would be happy with an agreement condition of an agreement or however we state that. Okay, so let's talk about size and mass. You know, I wasn't bothered about it. We want.
I just want to say one thing to Joe.
Yeah.
Or Richard, whoever. You know, again, the house to the north, that's got to be at least a 6 foot, if not 7 foot, if not 8 foot wall that goes significantly longer than that elevation. Mm-hmm. So really when you're looking down the street, what you'll see is above the line of the tops of the doors. So you actually not see that elevation as if no wall was there at all. The wall's obscuring everything, and the massing on the top does have a few offsets that are pretty significant in terms of the way that works. And the one on the south has a significant cut where the pool is.
Right.
So that's really different, too.
Thank you. Okay. And each wall elevation is set in. I mean, you're looking at it in a plan view there, but it steps in because the entryway walks along that one north side, and so that width of that entryway, that entire wall steps in where the door is, and then it pops back out towards the north, moving towards the bluff from that face on. So there is quite a bit. There'll be a big shadow line there, actually.
Okay, so I basically see a few issues we need to either address or agree on or condition. So, you know, size and mass, you know, other than Joseph here. I think we might, I'm kind of reading it as, you know, 4-1 for approval. Is that a...
Yeah, I don't, I mean, it seems like they checked the boxes. I mean...
Yeah. So. Okay.
And I will defer to Michael's judgments on that. That sounds...
Well, but
yeah.
That's persuasive. I think
the
wall.
Are your mics on?
No, sorry. No, I think Commissioner Lucas's comment is persuasive. I wasn't seeing that facade with the existing wall in place, and there are indentations. And I'm not certain one way or other on my opinion of it. But
My opinion on that is with that blinding polar white, I don't think you'll be able to see any of that articulation.
Okay, so that brings up color. Okay, where, Michael, you're okay with the white?
I, at the very least, would like to see it toned down to something, if it has to. I'm okay with a white, but I do not want a brilliant white there. I want something.
Jesse?
I've spent time in the Mediterranean, and I don't remember seeing really bright white houses. I remember seeing dingy houses, which were probably dirty, but, I mean, they could tone it down just a little bit. That wouldn't hurt anything.
Did I talk to you? I'm losing track here on the color.
It kind of changed.
Okay, and that's pretty much agreement. We need to get a more more of an earth tone, white, you know.
Can we ask to look at to study the house color next door? Because that appears to at least be light.
Yeah.
We can't be asking to go darker than that.
No. I'm not. I don't have a problem with white. I just, you know, just a polar white, I think, is too stark. You know, I don't have a problem with the white that the neighboring house is, you know. So, yeah. So, and then pool, you know, where do we stand on a pool?
Again, the idea of insurance, and I would hope that some form of this discussion ends up in some sort of a record that's available over time, so that if a problem does arise, it's clear that the applicant and the developer are on notice that this could present a problem, and that they decided to go ahead with it anyway. Yeah. I guess that'd be sufficient.
Yeah. personally, you know, I'll interject here. I don't know how we could condition this project to deny a pool.
If I may, you know, I want to let people do what they want to do, and I just want to help mitigate these potential problems in the future. So what I would encourage the designer to do is to look into some sort of an alarm system or some sort of some sort of mitigation that, hey, we're losing 100 gallons a day. There's a problem kind of thing. So.
Okay. You guys okay on that? Okay.
Just showing an image of Mykonos, Greece on Google Earth.
Okay, and then, Scott, do you have any answers for how we can monitor compaction and damage to the adjacent property?
So I mean, we could just add that into one of the conditions related to monitoring. They're going to have a geotech out on site while they're doing that. And we can just say we can add to the duties of that person that they, and maybe we have that included in the contract, that they monitor the adjacent foundation and adjacent house related to that, you know, that work. So
okay,
and so we can have that, and we can have them put that into the contract. So they have to give us a copy of the contract that says yes, they will do that.
Okay.
So I've done that on projects in the past for various issues, especially on blufftop projects. Actually,
yeah.
Not here though. When I was in Pismo, when it was.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? When that happens, do you have to have an existing study of the existing house to show where there's minor cracking and things like that in the stucco system?
Well, I would suggest that they do that to, you know, from a liability standpoint, it would probably make a lot of sense that they go through that process in case there was some dispute about whether something was damaged or not.
Okay, so I think that's the list I had. Does anybody else have any major issues that they want to bring up?
Just that solar thing that we mentioned.
Okay. Oh. Okay. Just conditions, or just... Yeah, condition it that the solar is not visible from the Embarcadero.
And then you want a pervious pavement.
And
that's approximately what we're seeing in terms of
percentage
of the front yard rendering.
Yeah.
That'd be subject to the evaluation and approval by the soils engineer?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Of course, we'll defer to the experts on that.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Do I have a... Do we have a motion?
It's going to be a tough one.
Yeah. Anybody want to?
Well, so what are we actually going to condition? The solar, the color?
Okay. Did you take that down as a list?
Yes.
Okay.
So the conditions are conditioned to record agreement to accommodate the neighbor's properties so that they have access and maintenance to the wall at the home at 206 Surf, as long as home exists within the setback area.
Okay.
Conditioned to keep narrow driveway as shown. Now I reword that to...
Yeah, and as a pervious paver.
And then I had a separate add impervious pavement with geotech approval.
Yes, okay.
No solar visible from Embarcadero, and compaction monitoring during work near neighbors. I'm going to add that to condition number 11 and require that they have a contract that they provide to the city that calls out that has to be monitored, and there may be existing condition inspection of the neighboring home.
Okay. And then the color.
Color to a less brilliant white, more earth tone.
Okay.
Did you want it? Okay, that's a question, actually. Do you want it to be less similar to what's proposed and more similar to the white that's next door? Is that what you were thought? You know, I mean, that could be a range to work
right,
with.
Right.
Less brilliant is like, okay, this one's, you know, it's got a light reflectivity value that's, you know,
yeah, I
two
think
numbers
it,
less.
I think it needs to be, you know, toned to the minimum of the house next door, and that's still a fairly white, but
everybody else.
But that's my opinion. Michael?
The lighter it is, the more the house helps itself light itself during the daytime and avoid using power.
I'm going to defer to the authority there.
I'm going to opt for greater compatibility with that house to the north.
Yeah,
sacrificing
okay. thereabouts.
Okay,
and yeah. we'll leave it in your capable artist eye.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, I think those are the conditions that I've noticed.
I didn't have anything else.
Okay. Then let's, Jesse, go for it.
I don't know that I can move this. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. I move that we adopt resolution number PC 14-18 on Exhibit A, approving the coastal development permit CPO-565 and conditional use permit UPO-514 to allow construction of a new 3,988 square foot single family dwelling on the Bluff property in the coastal appeal jurisdiction at 1169 West Street, with the added conditions that we just discussed.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Motion and second. Okay. Please call the question.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski?
No.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
Commissioner Ingraffia?
I'm going to say no.
Chairperson Luer?
I'll go yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm sorry for the wait for the second item. And I do believe that we will have the discussion on gates and gated driveways in the future, if not soon, when we have the LCP come forward, the GP. So moving, I apologize to the public. Moving forward, this is we'll bring forward item B2, and this is a concept plan review at 2996 Alder Avenue in Morro Bay, California. Nancy, do you have a staff report?
Yes, I do. And first, I wanted to mention that this was noticed as an action item, and the applicant and staff agreed that it would be better presented to you as a conceptual review, so there is no resolution, no action required other than your recommendations and comments.
Okay. Great.
This is a proposed three-family apartment at 2996 Alder on the corner of Alder and Sequoia. It's actually surrounded on three sides by streets, also on Birch. The subject site is about in the center, and you can see it's got three different zones. It's that block from the subject site south is R4 SP. There's single family residential to the east. There's multifamily R3 to the north, and there's mixed commercial residential to the west. The project zoning R4 is multifamily hotel professional. And the site is in an area where could be considered a buffer between higher density uses and lower density uses. The project proposes three family size apartments with parking on the lower level. And typically it would be allowed under administrative approval. The reason it's here is there's a couple of issues we wanted to run by you. It's building height. R4 allows 30 feet from the average natural grade. North Main Street specific plan encourages two-story over parking to a max of 25 feet. This is two-story over parking. It's very slightly subterranean. It's maybe a foot below. Planning Commission, there's a provision in that section that allows Planning Commission to approve up to 30 feet in height to encourage roof line variations. The other issue is parking. There's a lower level combined open, not open to the outside, but a combined parking garage for all three residential units. And the site is tight because it's surrounded on three sides by streets and sidewalks and public right-of-way. And so the current design shows two compact spaces, two standard size spaces, and a required van accessible space. So it shows five spaces. Six spaces are required because the units are all, there's one two-bedroom units and two three-bedroom units. The other parking concern is the setback on Sequoia. The zoning code requires 20 feet, and we have 15 feet in this situation. This is a perspective from Alder Avenue, and you can see the third floor is set back from Sequoia and from Alder and from Birch. This is another perspective from Birch. This, we had staff do a little research to find out when the last three-unit rental was approved in Morro Bay, and we found one. This project at 405 Pacific, it's at the northeast corner of Pacific and Monterey, was approved in December 2014. It's three market rate rental units on a parcel with an existing single family home. It has the same zoning, R4, without the SP. It's two and three story building. Three story building is allowed up to 30 feet in height. And it's a smaller, it's more units on a similarly sized lot with two car parking garages for each unit. To summarize the project, we were looking for some direction regarding the height. There's a concern that three family units would not be possible without approval of a greater height. I did ask the applicant to look at the third floor and see if a flat roof would, how much that would reduce the height of the project. The partial third story is set back from the property lines, which is in the design standards for multi-story projects in a mixed neighborhood with a variety of sizes. And the parking requirements, again, it's got streets on three sides. The applicant would like to know if there's justification for five spaces instead of six, and that really is caused because of the requirement for van accessible space. And again, they've already submitted a request for a parking exception to allow 15-foot setback for the garage entrance and compact size spaces instead of all required standard size spaces. And that concludes the staff presentation.
I would like to add something. The reason, one, after we noticed the project, is when we, in looking at the plans while we were developing the staff report, identified that an ADA accessible parking space was required and was not shown. And so that was sort of the tilting factor in saying maybe we should just take this as conceptual review because now we're asking for several different things. One of the ideas, though, and in the commission is commented on this several times, is how do we encourage developments on zoning that allows for denser development to max out. We don't really have that requirement in most of the zones, but we're always trying to look toward that. And so we thought this was a good example of a house providing rental housing, which is sorely needed in the city, and bringing it forward so you could see what it would take to make it work on a lot that's this size. And so it's also this kind of the secondary reason that we wanted to bring it forward as a concept review, just sort of get your input about what is acceptable and what isn't. We didn't really think that the 15-foot versus the 20-foot setback for the garage as much of an issue because it's not a garage door. You're not parking in front of it. It's going to have a gate, and it's going to open, and you're going to drive in. The policy seems at the 20-foot level, the 20-foot requirement to have been written to address individual garage doors and not this scenario. I think hence the reason we have parking exceptions allowed in our ordinance. I just wanted to provide at least a little bit of context here because it's not only valuable in talking about it for this project, but it's valuable for the Planning Commission overall in looking at these types of things and what it takes to make these projects work in these locations in town and whether it's appropriate or not. And then looking at the bigger picture, you're going to be seeing policy documents come forward in the form of the zoning code where we can either encourage these types of things or say, no, absolutely, we don't want 30-foot buildings in this area of town or that type of thing. So it seemed timely, one, in you know, to have the conversation. And so that's sort of why it's brought forward in the form that it is. Probably not normally something you would see from us because we'd be working on it internally at staff level, but it raised several issues that were of import to the commission recently, and so that's why it's here.
Great. Questions for staff? Or can we get into public comment?
I got a question. First, thanks, Scott, for bringing it, you know, to us. Can you explain to me, like, why the van accessibility, is that that's that part of the ADA thing?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Once they went from, you know, once they went from a two-unit project wouldn't be required to have that.
Okay.
But once you get into three, you have to have it. So.
Okay.
And it was unfortunate that we didn't catch it before. We were dealing with some of the other aspects of it, and, you know, the building department's been a little in flux, and so when I looked at it, when I was reviewing the staff report from Nancy, I was like, oh, the problem. And so we went back and started looking into it and saying, is there any exceptions, you know, that we can apply that would negate the need for it? And the answer to that question was no. Couldn't find any exceptions, and so we have to put this parking space in, blows the parking. And so you think, oh, it's one less space, but in reality, unless you have somebody that's using the space there, it's actually two less parking spaces, fortunately. And it's a very small project, right? And these are the types of things, the infill properties that we have, and we want to encourage denser development, but then you have things here that maybe don't mesh into doing that, but those are the types of properties that we have. We have small properties. We don't have large properties in town, and so these are the issues that we're going to continue to run into if we're trying to reach the densities that are allowed on these properties to try to encourage housing. So, again, it's a timely issue and not an easy. I don't think any of this stuff is easy, but I think it's definitely worth discussion.
And one more thing, Scott. You know, you mentioned it. You know, it is. It's a density issue, and it's, you know, we do have a rental housing problem. However, how do we have any kind of circular kind of inspection that, you know, like, what's to say these things doesn't turn into a condo and all of a sudden it's timeshare Airbnb?
Fair question. Right now it's not approved that way. It's approved as, I mean, or it's not approved that way. It's not proposed that way. It's proposed as rental housing. Mm-hmm. If they wanted to do condos, they'd have to bring a map forward that would require a coastal development permit and have that approved for this board.
Okay.
They'd have to design it to do that. That's not what they're proposing, so
right.
That's not what's going to happen at
right.
this point.
I get that.
And they're likely not going to design it to something that could be condoed later. It's more expensive to do those types of things, especially with the garage underneath it. I don't see that as much of an issue moving forward. As I might if they were condos, then certainly, you know, whatever our vacation rental ordinance ends up being, then maybe one of these could end up being a vacation rental.
Yeah.
As it stands right now, the draft ordinance has buffers in residential zones, so would place separation requirements between this and other ones, so you wouldn't get a whole bunch.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I see the elevator. So unit one would be fully accessible?
I don't think we've gotten to that level of it. We said they have the elevator so they can make it accessible. And then had to have the parking space. So, yeah. What was the
Joseph?
Scott, there's nothing that says they can't divide the property up with keeping it as single ownership with, like, Z-shaped things or townhouse type things. This is the choice to do an apartment building with a lower floor garage. That's just one typology you could put on the site out of many.
It could be condos. It could be townhomes. It would likely be a different configuration.
You could, for instance, that's common.
Yeah. Okay, we'll open it up for public comment, and would the applicant like to come forward?
Chairman Lehrer, Chuck Stevenson, again representing A.J. Wright and Phil Davis on this project. I do have a PowerPoint, and so if I could get that loaded up once again.
Okay, great. Can we have some, you need technical help? Okay,
very good. Yeah, again, Chuck Stevenson. I wanted to thank staff, in particular Scott Graham, for working with us on this one. We did run into a few unforeseen issues, but we think with your commission's favorable feedback to us, we think we can probably make this thing work. So it does raise some big issues for us in planning, and this is an opportunity to do something a little bit innovative with a relatively small lot. It is located in a R4. The whole block is zoned for your highest density zoning category, and it's adjacent to commercial. The houses on Alder, between Alder and Birch, are older. Some might argue that they're reaching perhaps their useful life in terms of a future redevelopment. That's perhaps why the city has been looking at this as R4 for some time. this is just a site plan, roughly square, 75 by 80 feet. What some of the advantages for this design that I put into this was that to really attract a range of household sizes. So there are larger ones, but clearly in the city of Morro Bay, we need a variety of apartment sizes for different household sizes. I try to deal with the scale and mass and reduced the second and third floor setbacks. The garage is slightly recessed, as Nancy mentioned, about a foot and a half below average natural grade. Parking is not visible, which is a nice thing in a neighborhood. And there are ample private outdoor spaces with decks and terraces, as well as some yard area. So this is a layout of the first level. And the lot coverage is about 52%. We're allowed 60, so we're doing pretty good in that regard for this structure. This is a floor plan of the apartment, and unit one, there was a question about could that be made accessible. Our plan would be to make unit one fully accessible. It's 810 square feet. Unit two is 1,421 square feet. And unit three is 1,550 square feet. Generally, these are pretty generous for apartments, but again, we need a variety of housing for different household types. Certainly, there are families who need apartments. So when we're looking at some of the parking exceptions, there's a provision in the ordinance under section 17.44.020, A3.1.E, where there's an overlay zone, lesser parking may be allowed if specified in an overlay zone, but in no case shall be less than two spaces for a residence of greater than 1,000 square feet of living area. So there is a potential for your commission to consider that for the one unit that's 810 square feet. And as Scott mentioned, for the garage setback, it normally is for when you have a driveway that's directly in front of a garage. You need 20 feet of parking so the car parked there wouldn't overhang a sidewalk. So that is not relevant in this case and would otherwise block access to the garage. So one other thing I'd like to share with your commission, and that is that one parking space reduction is requested for the smaller size apartment because of easy non-vehicular access to a local market, which is just down the street, to schools, which are just a few hundred feet away, to recreation opportunities, both the park and to the ocean, and to employment, all via either transit, walking, or cycling. We are literally, well, I'll go into that in a moment. And to make up for one of the required spaces, I thought of a possible option I wanted to share with your commission, which would be to allow an uncovered space within the street side setback along Sequoia, and this would be screened from view, and we would use pavers that would allow water to permeate, and we would screen that with screening vegetation so it wouldn't be visible from the street. It's another consideration. In terms of general plan policy, that would support some flexibility. The housing element indicates that although the city does not see current development standards as a constraint to the development of housing, to ensure that multifamily projects are able to meet maximum densities and generally ensure that development standards do not constrain the development of multifamily housing, the city has included program H13, which states that the city will continue to allow flexibility in development standards such as height, parking, and setbacks for multifamily projects. And this is just a copy of that policy, and just focusing on the center portion of that. The city will continue to implement procedures with objective standards to promote flexibility in development standards for height, parking, and setbacks. So, as was pointed out earlier, Morro Bay is in need of this housing typology. For this is right out of your housing element, showing on the left side units that have 2 to 4 unit apartments. Only 7% of the housing stock as of 2013 was that typology. That's pretty low compared to single-family detached. And of course, the purpose of R4 zoning is to allow higher density apartment projects where appropriate. We're also, as you know, we're all now dealing with state requirements to deal with more seriously with our RENA numbers. And I found an interesting statistic when I contacted the department a day or two ago. What Morro Bay has reported to the State Department of Finance for the years 2015, 16, and 17 for market rate apartment buildings is zero. So we all know we need apartments, and so this is an opportunity to do something here with a little bit of flexibility. So Nancy asked me if I would look at consideration for a flat roof concept, that what that might do to lower the height a bit. And I could foresee us going from we're at 29.6, and we could go down 2 feet. We could be at 27.6 with a flat roof configuration, if that's the direction your commission would like to go. I personally prefer this because I just think that it fits in more with the character of the neighborhood. There are many benefits to this project. As I mentioned, Morro Bay needs apartments for all ranges of household sizes and incomes. The proposed apartment provides housing types that meet the general plan goals, housing element priorities, and regional housing needs allocation. The access to transit is a big benefit. Literally within 150 feet of this site is a fixed route transit state bus stop at Main and Sequoia, and this accesses all areas of Morro Bay. It's close to schools, 300 feet from Del Mar Elementary and its associated park, and transit and safe bicycle access to the high school. It's easy access to a food market, only 700 feet to Del Mar Market. It's easy access to the beach via walking, bicycle, and transit. And it's easy access to employment locations via transit. So this is, if you will, a poster child for R4 lot that could benefit from a parking reduction, because of the easy access, walkability, transit, and so forth. So with that, our applicant requests your commission's approval of the concept plan. We will go further and fine-tune the design and work with staff on more building detail and articulation. And that concludes my remarks.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We'll probably be talking to you a little bit later here. Would anybody else from the public like to speak to this item? Please say your name.
Apparently I'm short. My name is Mary Jo Rogers. I happen to live in the little yellow house on Birch, right across the field from this. I've been there 21 years, and I realize that, yes, someday someone's going to buy this property, and, yes, you know, what little tiny view I have will be gone, and that's not a big deal. That has nothing to do with why I am here. I am here because we have two sets of condos and one set of apartments on Sequoia Street, right across the street from me. And if possible, I would like to hand you some pictures. We have no street parking in the evenings and on weekends. During the day, yes, some of the people go to work and it's gone. But it is unbelievably tight and it's just going to get worse. This project has too many apartments, you know, too much. They are not done with anything but my iPhone, so they're not great. But it'll give you an idea. I've tried to take different angles. When I got the little postcard in the mail, I went, oh, goodness. Okay, so I have a few objections. One is the height, which, unless you guys agree to make it almost 30 feet high, apparently, according to your own website, it says the proposed project could not achieve the required density if that height is not allowed. And that's only, you know, one little thing that's a problem with it. The parking, having one less because of the ADA van requirement, I think that the ADA van requirement is wonderful. I think we need more of those. I have two sons that are disabled. And let me tell you, this county does not have any apartments hardly available for people who are disabled. It's really tough to find it. So I agree with that. However, I do not agree with two subcompacts, two regular cars, and the van parking, because then you have less parking, which will be more street parking. I came home from a meeting one night, and the friend who drove me home said, "My God, there's no place to park on this street." I said, "Yep." You know, so we already have that problem. Having the 1-2-bedroom is nice because there's only X amount of people that will fit in that, but 2-3-bedrooms, there could be a lot of people in that, even if they have small kids, which I know we need that kind of housing. Those kids grow up like they did across the street, and all those kids go to work, and we have more cars on the street. So the density is really not great for this neighborhood. We're already pretty dense. Yes, you have single family and stuff, but across the street you have a lot of multifamily projects. So that is one of the problems. Who is going to make sure that the new tenants each have a subcompact to put in that apartment? And they don't have big trucks that aren't going to fit in the garage and that will also be out on the street. We have a lot of them. That's probably one reason why everybody else who has to have garages across the street, because that was required at the time they were built, they can't get them in there, so they're on the street. Anyway, I just wondered who was going to monitor this. We need affordable housing, but I would imagine this is not going to be very affordable. It is going to be two-story Ocean View housing. So I can imagine that it will be, for the 800-square-foot place, it'll probably be about 1,500 to 1,700 for the three-bedroom places. Oh, my gosh, who knows? Even higher. And I don't agree with the cutting 5 feet off of the setback for the building's slash garage opening, because the garage opening is the edge of the building. So you want to put it 5 feet closer to the road. Don't need that. Anyway, I know, because I printed it this afternoon, that the Planning Commission has several occasions has expressed a desire to build out projects to the density allowed by the zoning code. But this project, we need a parking exemption for the garage and entrance for the amount of cars in the garage per unit, and then the height also. So there's three things that I think would not fit in with the current neighborhood. Please, in conclusion, please stick to the current standards that you guys have. There is a vacant lot the exact same size on the corner of San Jacinto and Alder, between Alder and Birch. And that project was two houses. And that was permitted because that's what your guys' standards are. This three unit is too big for our neighborhood. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Next, please.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is Bernie Melvin. I live at, my wife and I own a home at 2998 Elm Avenue, about four blocks above this proposed project. We've owned that home and lived there for 39 years. I can't see this lot from my home. It's not taken my view. My comments are based on my concerns with the density and the height. If we were to get in our Wayback Machine, I've obviously been there a long time. When I bought my house in 1979, Sequoia Street from Main to Elm was a 12-foot-wide dirt road. Del Mar Elementary School was closed due to lack of enrollment. My oldest child never got to go to school there. There were no condos, no apartments. Fast forward. We've had a lot of development and a lot of changes in that neighborhood, and I've basically approved of all of that. I had the privilege of sitting on this planning commission for almost 10 years, so I voted to approve a lot of projects in that area, so I am not anti-development. I've also been a planner for the city of Los Angeles and a senior planner for San Luis Obispo County. I happen to work with our esteemed applicant's representative. A.J. Wright does good projects, and they work. I'm concerned with the density and the height. If you were to pull out a copy of the North Main Street specific plan, my name is on there as one of the authors. The city council did something a little different with a specific plan in this area. They didn't hire a consultant. They used city officials, and I happen to be a representative for the Planning Commission on that. We had a lot of hearings, a lot of public notification. A lot of people came to our meetings. One of the big things they were concerned about was height and density. If you were to do a land use survey of that area, if you go south and east, it's completely single family with a few bootleg duplexes and garage apartments. I'm not against inappropriate development, but I think this is forced. I'm concerned with the parking, the setback, and the height. In my opinion, there is not significant public benefit to approve this project as proposed. If you were going to approve this project as it sits, I feel that the required public benefit would require affordable housing, basically deed restricted, and I think that's something for you folks to talk about. Okay, so I'd like to see you reduce the density. I'd adhere to the 25-foot height limit. In my time on the Planning Commission, I heard a lot of testimony about community character, and that's what I'm talking about here. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Anita Ayub. I live at 2988 Birch Avenue, right by where the site is going to be built. I have no objection for any building to go on there, but this project is not compatible for our area. And Mary Jo has said just about everything I was going to say about the parking, because I have the same problem. People come over to my house and say, we were going to drop by, but guess what? You had company already. And I'm looking like, what? Because there's cars out in front of my house, just they are as at Mary Jo's. We have a school there, yes. And we have a low housing area where a lot of people go to work. And like Mary Jo said, the pickups are parked right in front of our houses because there's no parking. I do believe this homes, the apartments that they're going to build, do have parking areas. But like it is, if you have a big pickup, you can't park in that. I hope you do not consider about building this monster. It's what, 29 going now on 30? Uh-uh, too high. I hope you don't approve of this conception. And by the way, there is a the siren, that big, tall, nobody even noticed it when they put it on there. That will not ever be removed. And when that goes off, believe me, even my house shakes. Thank you very much, and I hope this project does not go. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Linda Merrill, and my husband and I wrote you all emails. Did you receive them?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, good. Thank you. My neighbors have made a wonderful case against this project as the concept that's come before us. I'm really sorry that we are somehow guinea pigs for the city to say, oh, well, we're going to just throw this out there and see how it's accepted, see what the neighbors think about it. This has got us really upset, folks. You know, I mean, this is the quality of life issue for us. You guys think, oh, well, multifamily, we don't count. You know, you look down from your mansions up on the hill and you think, oh, those people down there in those condos, they don't really care about their neighborhood. But, you know, we do. My neighbors, I know my neighbors here, I've known them for 30 years, you know, and we care about each other and we care about our quality of life. And this is, if you all approve this kind of concept for neighborhoods, nobody else has a three-story. You know, why is this owner able to violate all of these rules? We live by the rules. We all live by rules. How come somebody can come and just say, I'm not going to adhere to that rule, and this rule doesn't count, and, oh, well, we'll just mess up that rule. So, you know, folks, this is really serious for us, and we're really upset. I mean, we don't come to these meetings very much, or maybe at all. Some people have never been to these kinds of meetings. But we're out tonight, and we're asking you to look at this thing seriously. You know, this is not a good fit for our neighborhood. Thank you all.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so this is a little, you know, this isn't a motion item, so do we have questions for the applicant? Who wants to start? Okay.
I have a question for Mr. Stevenson. It seems like a pretty plain reading of the exception, the height exception, is that you can build a structure to 25 feet, and if you need some additional footage in order to vary that roof structure, you will get some additional footage. Is that a fair interpretation? Would you agree?
I think generally it is a fair description. There is some wiggle room for your commission in terms of how you interpret a recessed garage. You know, we have recessed it a bit. We could recess it a few inches more to get it down in order to get height down. So I think the language in the ordinance is gives you some room.
Jesse,
could you not break 27 feet?
I believe so. Yeah. Let me look at that.
With the flat roof and a slight recess of the an additional recess.
So just looking at this graphic, what I've tried to show here was we're at 29.6. If we did flat roof, we could reduce it down to 27, and I could reduce the subgrade another 6 inches to get to 27. So, yes.
Okay, Michael?
Did you take a look at actually trying to get four units on there with garages instead of three with a combined garage like this? Because you have three street orientations.
Yeah,
so
right.
It would seem to me that you've got three really open views, and the concern I have is that the singular garage kills the. I appreciate what you say, you can't see the cars, but it kills the first level in terms of it feeling like a neighborhood building. It makes it feel more like a commercial building that might be a block away.
Well, can I just... I don't think I can get to four. I think I can get to... Maybe Nancy or...
Not at those square footages. No, you'd have to...
Well, there's a density issue. It's just numbers of units, regardless of that, too. That's a factor.
Because the great thing about a garage and that 20-foot space is then your large truck does fit in at least your own space in front of your garage door. And, you know, I'm a little concerned about the need for the people who don't have a vehicle that's going to work in there to start parking. And then if you've got an older child live in a child in one of those places that drives, then you've got 2-3 cars per unit. I don't know. But that's my main question. Did you look at the townhouse kind of typology with either 3 or 4 townhouses?
I looked at there were 2 or 3 different design options that I worked with. One was to have a garage accessing off Birch, mm-hmm. and then another one off of Alder, mm-hmm. and to try to work that situation. I didn't get to 4 units, and really it started taking up too much ground area to have any living space on the ground floor. Mm-hmm. It was becoming very.
Yeah.
This was the option I saw, mm-hmm. and frankly, if we think about R4 density, just generally speaking. To achieve those densities, we really need podium parking, we need height, and we need those kinds of considerations when we're doing high density housing. Mm-hmm. And this is I would argue that this is not high density. I mean, even your R4 zoning at 27 units per acre is not high density. So we're trying to work with the standard what we have, but recognizing that higher density in a lot of cases is going to require a little flexibility as your ordinance and your housing element indicate.
I'm not opposed to flexibility, but I think you have to see the outcomes in the nature of the design. I mean this mm-hmm. are we doing comments as well at this point?
Go ahead. We're a little more informal right now.
Yeah, I would just say to me that it looks like a large building instead of 3 residences. And that's going to work against it. It works against it at the street level because of the garage. It works against it in that you really don't identify the unit entrance to the individual dwellings. And you end up with this kind of low-sloped roof profile that I think is absolutely deadly in terms of something that works with this neighborhood because it just elongates the building. And we would not ever look at this as being compatible with our neighborhood design standards based on the massing that it has. I think it's. We had something in here a few weeks ago that we looked at that I thought was two houses with two granny units, two secondary dwelling units. And that had a scale aspect to it that I thought was spectacular, that they wanted too much height. And this strikes me as going the different direction. It strikes me as an extraordinarily large building. And I think that's always going to end up being the biggest problem here, is even with that north elevation set back that your third level doesn't start until you're farther down south in the block, I think that it's a... I think that's the way I'm reading it, right? The two-story part is to the north?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the side that...
This elevation.
Yeah, I think that's the side that... I'm actually kind of surprised about that, because I would have thought that to get the three units to have a piece of a view, you'd want the view side to be the north side looking out to the northwest. So if you're looking at this way, eventually the commercial on the main street probably is going to be high enough to block all the views of whatever this is. Just a guess. I guess my other concern is that third story ends up having the ridge line go the north-south direction, which means you really get very little ability to see through that top highest mass. And I think that may be an issue. Those are my comments.
I always like to listen to you first, because you do bring up, I had a sense, for me it was the massing part of it, but the way you described it, that's what I kind of felt. And then I think that what you mentioned with the ridge, that north-south as well, that contributes to the, for me anyway, the massing of the building. And I think that the issue of height, you could probably address that with what Jesse was saying earlier, but the it's for me it's the massing, it's a neighborhood compatibility and the massing of it.
What on that third floor, what's the plate level height? I was having trouble making that out.
Plate height on the top floor, I believe, is 8 feet.
No, I mean, I saw it was 8 feet, but from average natural grade, what is that before the roof starts? So,
well, I'm not not exactly from. Are you talking about from out here or
from? So your third floor plate height, your top plate.
Yes.
Okay. What is that above average natural grade?
From this point above an average natural?
Yeah.
Just sort of doing the math, I'd say it's about 3 feet lower, so maybe 24 feet?
Okay. To me, it's important. That's important. It's an important figure, and I didn't see that on, on the plans, and I also didn't see a site plan developed enough. I know we're early in the process to see how the building could get pushed around on the site a little bit, but I think we're pretty tight on all of our boundaries. So the way I read the ordinance is that the extra height is allowed for varied roof line articulation and development. And so I'd really like to see from staff, too, is if we could, do we have a hard reading on what the ordinance says?
It does speak to the roof line. I think the policy gives discretion to the Planning Commission to make some decisions. I think it's pretty clear the city's housing element directs us to encourage multifamily housing. Again, my sort of preamble before we started into the discussion was sort of along those lines, was that if we wanted, our ordinance isn't kind to this type of housing, right? I mean, we're running into problems in it because it doesn't really accommodate it very well. But there are provisions in our code that speak to it and speak to us, providing some flexibility there. So that's kind of, I mean, so
there are exceptions, and there are parking exceptions, and, you know, and there's the, hey, we need the planning commission to make the decision that we can go to 30 feet or above 25. Those provisions are written into the code, and they're and the use of those provisions are encouraged by our housing element, realizing that our codes aren't kind to multifamily development. And so, again, that's sort of why we're here having the conversation. Yeah. So it depends on whether you want to take that discretion or not. I can't speak to how it's been used in the past. We have 30-foot buildings down there, a few, and they are standalone units, or there's two units, you know, on one lot, I think, is what we have with a couple of those. Not sure what the findings were on those or what the reasoning behind the approval was. Unclear. We could do some research if you want us to come back to you on that.
Now, there was those four buildings on Birch Street that got developed. They were supposed to be developed as town, as individual houses, and they were developed as townhouses, and they had some parapet, deck railings that were solid that went up over 30 feet, or 230 feet, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And so we have these popping up in different areas down there, and it's what I'm having trouble with is there's a mishmash of application, and I'm having trouble making a consistent, the logic of a consistent ruling for this project, for Stollmeyer's project, for the one that's going to be next door that's going to come through that house is for sale. Mm-hmm.
And we're fixing those. I mean, so
yeah.
we recognize that from the staff level. These are not fantastic, and they have the sort of unintended consequence, I think, back from when they were written, that it makes it hard for these types of things to fit in. Whereas this is the zoning we placed on here, so we expect you to have something that's more dense.
Right.
But then we trying to make it work is difficult with the parameters. So we have addressed some of this in the code update. You haven't seen it yet, but I mean, we are cognizant of that, and we're trying to remove barriers. So that's kind of what this is about. Does it fit nicely into the way this is written? No, it doesn't. This policy really doesn't speak to fitting in residential density. It speaks to architectural and articulation, pitched roofs versus flat roofs. That's what it speaks to.
Yeah. I think density bonuses are one of the considerations that could help us along is to have a deed restricted, have that one unit that would be, handicapped accessible, universal design or however you want to say that, to have that deed restricted, since you have a handicapped parking space required, would your client be amenable to that?
I could talk to them about that. I mean, certainly we will make it fully accessible, handicap accessible, the number one unit. That was in the plan. To put a deed restriction on it in terms of fixing a rent over a period of time could be difficult to get a loan from a bank. And I'm not sure we could achieve a bonus. There's not enough of that to achieve any density benefit. So I think what we could do is certainly make it accessible.
Okay. Yeah, but if it's accessible and it's rented to market rate to first come, first serve, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's gonna solve a community problem that we can.
We certainly would make an effort to make it available first to people with a disability. That would be our commitment to doing that, absolutely. And we'd make it available for a period of time, maybe 6 months, make that available to persons with a disability that would need that kind of housing. That's part of our plan. We certainly can work with the height. I mean, I'm happy to play with a roof configuration, get it down a couple more feet if that's some direction your commission would see happening. And I'm also curious to get a reaction on the idea of that site plan. I know it's not consistent with your ordinance to have an uncovered space.
Right.
But if we're talking about making flexibility, making things work to get that space, and I can make it attractive and make it and conceal it with attractive landscaping feature and pavers, That would take away one of the issues.
If I may, I had a thought on that. So, I mean, we're trying to reduce the amount of vehicles. We're trying to encourage
transit.
We're trying to encourage bicycles. What about bike lockers, or maybe some long-term bike parking that makes it, you know, someone with a really nice $2,000 bike doesn't want
to
drag it up to the third floor. They can park it downstairs and lock it up. That seems like something.
There is storage.
That is something we were going to provide anyway, but we do have room right along the stairway for a narrow bike locker that would be happy to do that. I was thinking of a motorcycle spot, bike lockers for sure. We do have storage shown here for private storage.
And the other thing as far as apartment too is, you know, to have the availability for the owners to have EV charging, mm-hmm. you know, level 2 charging.
I agree.
So, you know, I think that would be a condition I'd want to see on
this. We would accept that for sure. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So,
I had a couple more thoughts.
Okay,
if I may. I was asking questions. I didn't get a chance to kind of weigh in how I felt about this. So I really like it, except for the height. Mm-hmm. I'm more than willing to consider that exemption for the parking, given that you have an ADA accessible parking requirement that kind of eliminates one spot for you. I would be willing to consider the reduction in front yard setback. However, I think that a 2 foot over the limit is about as high as I would be willing to even consider, mm-hmm. giving the way the community feels about this. I do love the idea of an accessible unit, and to further that notion, I was wondering if maybe you would be willing to partner with some sort of a local, I don't want to say nonprofit, but some sort of a local agency that maybe is looking places disabled folks in.
Sure, absolutely.
And maybe get some sort of list from them on, you know, I mean market rate. You know, not asking you to give it away, but just work with those types of agencies to maybe place.
Yes, absolutely. Veterans, local veterans facilities, things like that, or others. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, the Eagles is close.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right. Now that's a great idea.
Have you looked into also doing a little more articulation on the facade? That's one of the one of the issues is that it reads as a solid mass.
Right. We sort of tapped the brakes a bit when we ran into some issues.
Yeah.
I didn't want to spend more of my clients' money on more design if it wasn't going to end up. But definitely have more ideas for the lower floor spaces where there's some, you know, some building masses and articulation that's needed down in here. Some openings and some fenestration and make it look more interesting. Varied materials, we can do that to help reduce scale and massing.
Okay, and then, Commissioner Lucas mentioned the, instead of the north-south ridgeline, the east-west ridgeline, you know, as far as a, you know, that would give you a little bit more, you know, air space for mm-hmm. the neighborhoods behind you. You know,
sure, we could look at that. So just change the direction of the north, this ridge.
Right,
to go the other direction.
Correct. Okay.
But I think I just wanted to, though, if we are reducing height, then I'm
you're probably going to a flat roof.
Yeah.
But
I will articulate that with a nice facade that's articulated and attractive and use of color.
Yeah, the blockhouse mentality can, you mm-hmm. know, it definitely is a detriment to what you're trying to achieve here. So go ahead.
Yeah, my thoughts. Given that these are 2 3 bedrooms and 1 2 bedroom, and sometime over time, more cars will be associated with that. So I think on its face, the parking arrangements for something this size are just inadequate. But more importantly is the sensitivity to this height limitation. And I think if I read the community properly, there has to be an unassailable good reason go over 25 feet, and by good reason, I mean good reason for the community. Okay, so we have this exception that essentially, as I believe and as I got the appropriate response, was you can build the 25 feet, and if you want to do a more interesting roof treatment, we will allow you to go a little bit higher. But as the current application is in, there's nothing to suggest that the height is required by a more interesting roof design. It's required to create a third story, which is, I believe, not really what that exception was intended to do. Now, there's a community good in providing affordable housing, but I would caution there's a good in providing rental housing, but what we really want to achieve is affordable rental housing. And this exception, this application on its face, to my way of thinking, does not provide affordable rental housing. In addition, it's in a community which is largely two stories apartments and single families, so it's not terribly appropriate for that reason. And finally, the height restriction is here, the 25-foot restriction is here, to preserve the wonderful small-town feeling of Morro Bay, but also, indirectly, to provide some kind of equity in terms of view sharing. Okay, I realize that no one has a property right to a view, but nevertheless, we're trying to keep the height down so that people have some ability to see the ocean and the like. And that's not achieved here by raising it. So I am opposed to this for the simple reason that I don't see sufficient community good in it. There we go.
Okay, I guess we're at comments now.
Oh,
so go ahead.
One more, yeah. This, you know, Joe, you brought up a lot of good points. And I was wondering if, you know, when we're talking about affordable housing, right, or, you know, more rent, I mean, that's not affordable, but let's say it's more density, and we want to make it for community good. And I don't necessarily know if I agree with this or not, but, I mean, if you had more units, smaller units, okay, in a space, then there's more room, you know. But when you have three bedroom, you know, more room for maybe accepting variances. But when you have three bedroom apartments and two of them, and that's kind of,
I mean, we lack rental housing, period.
Yeah.
Affordable's fantastic, but we lack rental housing, period. Try to go rent someplace.
Oh,
in town,
I know.
Right now. I mean, good luck.
Yeah,
it's tough, and usually there's a line, and that thing, and whatever's for rent goes like that.
Yeah,
that's been the experience with folks trying to rent, with folks that work for me, trying to rent housing and not being able to find it. It's a tough housing market. I thought this project was unique from the standpoint that it did provide three bedroom units that would allow a family to rent them. You know, we don't have much of that. And Nancy showed you the last multi-family housing project that we developed. That was 2014, and it was a smaller project, a very well done project. I like that thing. I like that project a lot. It was really thoughtfully laid out. This is the maximum number of units you can get on this lot based on the density that applies to the zone. So it's three. You can get three. Could they have smaller units? Sure, they could have two bedroom units and a one bedroom unit. It's just, these are all things. Housing for families is something that we need in town. I mean, we don't have it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would argue that, I mean, not argue, I mean, that the legislature is telling you this too. It's not just me. We have a housing crisis. We're grossly short on housing, and so is this ideal? Well, no, because it doesn't comply with all of our requirements. But do our requirements really fit this type of housing? I would argue that they don't.
I guess the thing that I'm most sympathetic to is this idea of the parking problems, because I'm impacted by a rental unit next to us that, you know, periodically there's 5-6 cars that show up to that house that's rented. And my concern is that if you have a garage, you've got a definitive number of spaces. if I've got a garage with a driveway, I always have the driveway. We're on record as having approved small units in special situations with tandem parking. You know, so if I can get three cars per unit with three townhouse type things with tandem parking, I think that's superior to having a garage underneath that kills the lower level in terms of human presence. And I think that you can do things with the grade. You can do things with the code. I think says kitchens and bathrooms only need to have 7-foot clearance. You can do lofts above those things to get extra bedroom space or something like that. I think there's all sorts of ways to compress the height down without making it seem this large. That's just an opinion.
Okay, let's.
I meant to bring this up. I meant to bring this up. I actually live on the corner of Monterey and Pacific, where that last project went in, and it's all apartments right there. It's all high density, and you know, parking is a problem. You know, where I live, parking is a problem. You know, if I have two spots, but you know, if my mom comes to visit, she's parking a block and a half away, and I have to, she parks and I have to go park her car for her. You know, that's just kind of the nature of the beast, and you know, I mean, I need somewhere to live, so I took it, and people need places to live, so.
Yeah. Joseph, did you have anything else? Okay.
Just to reiterate, we have an opportunity here to achieve some kind of affordable housing on that unit, and perhaps what we need to alter is the density, which would then provide an unassailable good reason to allow a little bit more height, so that perhaps we can accommodate four units of two and one bedrooms, which brings the rental price down and makes it available to more. I'm sympathetic that there's clearly a lack of any kind of rental space. Okay, and now I say to myself, well, we're going to try and cure it. Let's try and cure it with affordable rental space.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay, I'm sure you're looking for some clear direction.
I would just like to comment on the term affordable, because this is something as planners we, you know, it doesn't mean anything. Mm. Unless it's deed restricted.
No.
Right.
I apologize for not being more specific. I simply mean market rates. Smaller sized
habitats, which then are require a lower rent level because of a lower square footage, market rates, that's all.
Okay. I guess it's my turn now. Okay. One of the major, you know, in our planners college that we went to, or our seminar, there was mentioned there's like 5,000 plus bills coming before the state assembly and state house, mm-hmm. Congress, all dealing with affordable housing. You know, unless we start building them, they're going to be shoved down our throat.
That's right.
And these are going to be done by right. Mm-hmm. And we will have no say on them at all. And so
that's right.
We haven't approved multifamily housing here very well. As far as the making all of the, you know, all of the new multifamily housing, you know, studios, we need a variety of housing stock. You need two bedroom apartments for somebody that's got two kids. Mm-hmm. You know, for a family that's got two kids that's starting doing a startup or working for Amazon or something, you know. So we need the variety. And so just pushing everything into studio and one bedrooms, that's not going to solve our housing problem here. The problem we have here with this site is it's adjacent to a residential neighborhood, and we're only allowing 25 feet with exceptions, and you can't fit three stories in 25 feet. You can squeeze in, you know, but you just can't. So I'm not sure where we go with this as far as in the LCP update, unless we deal with that height restriction,
at 25 to take it up.
We're dealing with it.
Yeah, to take it up to 30 feet, we're not going to get multifamily homes.
Is this a geologic area that the geotechnics are going down 3 feet?
Well, the problem is you've got 15 feet to go down that 3 feet in. So at a 6% grade on that driveway, you're only dealing with a 0.9-foot detention. So at a 14% grade for that driveway, you're going from 0 to 14 to 0. You're getting maybe a foot and a half at the most. Mm-hmm. So over that course of distance, unless you got that truck that sits 30 inches high off the ground, you're not going to clear the brake on the pavement. So that's the restriction on these for burying that 3 feet down, is what, which ideally is what should be done. But I don't see how you get that with a driveway, especially a 15 foot or even a 20 foot driveway.
That's why I say I can go down a little bit, but not much.
Yeah. So that was my reading on it. So as far as clear direction, I'm not sure, we're supposed to offer it, and I think we're. Microphone?
Let's take it bite by bite.
Okay.
So the parking.
I'll start off with that. I'm happy with the adjacent outdoor space, seen as one of the units, we could justify that, as one of the units is a one-bedroom unit under 1,000 square feet. We allow a single covered parking spot for single-family homes with under 1,000 square feet, with one covered parking. So having the parking, in the setback, we've approved that on other lots, so I could go with that. So anybody else want to?
I agree. I'd be in favor of approving the parking exception.
Joseph?
Some of these parking spaces are for subcompacts, I believe?
They're for compact spaces. Compact. Some of them are compact, yeah.
I think we have to come up with a better solution. I don't think it's adequate. I don't like it, no.
Good. Michael?
I'm open to seeing more spaces somehow appear on the site. I don't know if that's the right place to have them. To me, that's the front of the building, because that's the way everybody's going to be proceeding from Main Street to get there. And that's my biggest concern, is its appearance from the north, I think, is especially problematic right now.
Richard, parking?
I'm not a big fan of compact parking. On-site option, take a look
for the parking. Sorry about that. Yeah.
May I clarify just one on the parking? Two are full-size, 10 wide, two are 9 feet, and one is eight wide. So they're not all.
Okay.
So I think Commissioner Lucas had the most to say related to the architecture of the building. I'd like a little more input. I think Commissioner Lucas articulated well what his concerns were. Do the rest of the commission share the similar concerns? One, it looks like potentially if we're going to push it down, I guess let's back up one. So are we good if they're able to make it at 27 feet?
That's as high as I could approve.
Joseph?
No, because I think that's a misreading of the exception. I think the exception is designed to have a structure at 25 feet, and we will allow for a more attractive or interesting roof. And as currently conceived, I don't believe that that's the purpose of the request for the exception. So it's possible that I could see a redesigned project in which, yes, it was designed, and I could honestly say that we are granting the extra 2 feet in order to have a more varied roof structure, but I don't see it in the application now.
Well, certainly, Commissioner Gawker brings up a very good point. We'll provide findings along those lines as well for you.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, I actually agree with with Joe on that one. I think it depends, not on this product, not on this design.
I took that away from previous comments.
Exactly the same thing. For me, it's the massing part of it. Okay,
that's good.
Yeah, I couldn't go with the way the project's laid out right now, but if it came with a much stronger project with more community good to it, then I could be convinced, you know. But I'm not. This project is just too blocky, and ridgeline runs the wrong way. I don't think it it could address the issues better. But I'm still caught in that if we're trying to get multifamily, you know, the 25 foot height limitation is almost a dead stop for it. You're locked into a townhouse arrangement with garage on the ground floor and living up above, and you're dealing with maybe, you know, just a single level with maybe a loft. So, you know, if you can come up with some other magical arrangements.
I appreciate all your comments, in particular Commissioner Lucas. I agree. And as I mentioned earlier, we sort of held back on moving ahead with more articulation because we need to come here to get some direction. But I hear what you're saying. We'll look at the exterior elevations to give them a more human presence on the street, the lower level, more window fenestration, more articulation in some fashion. Go to a flat roof concept and go to 27 feet, and yeah, I think we can accomplish what your ideas are.
Okay.
I want to clarify what I was saying.
Sure.
Was, I mean, I was kind of being very direct. I will not support anything in excess of 27. So, I mean, I don't necessarily love the way it's designed either,
mm-hmm.
and I just wanted to clarify that for the record. Anything above 27, I don't think I would support in any fashion. So,
Roger that.
That's really what I was trying to say. So,
got it.
Okay.
Something that you gave great guidance. I mean, clearly they could go design a project that has two units on it, come through here and be done with it. But if they can work through the issues that were raised here and that we talked about this evening and try to get three, I mean, that's the hope. If it can't be done, then it can't be done. But I appreciate the input. Thank you.
And it may be better to wait for the, see what the LCP, what the new regulations are, you know. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And we'll move on from this. Hopefully you got the guidance you were looking for. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, I want to thank the public for coming out on this also. Okay, we're gonna backstep a little bit to go back to Planning Commissioner announcements. Okay. Seeing none, we have no presentations. We've got a consent calendar. Item A1 is the current and advanced processing list. We, at this point, we need to receive and file. I don't think there's any action required on that.
You don't have to do anything with
that. We got through B1 and B2. New business, none. Unfinished business, none. Once again, Planning Commissioner comments. We've already gone through that. Community Development Director comments.
I do have a question for you. I was looking at calendars moving forward because we have a lot of items making their way through the process, and so we're going to be seeing some heavy agendas coming forward. You know, one of them is going to be Panorama in June. You may have an agenda, you know, moving coming up here pretty quickly that has maybe even four or five items on it, depending. And we're slating in review of the general plan, LCP, and zoning code into those. You'll be seeing modules two, the height issue on module two coming back to you, and then module three on the 15th of May, so the next meeting. And I looked
beyond, because it's off the dry erase board calendar on my wall, and I looked at what happens in July, and our meeting's on the 3rd.
Oh.
So I'm asking whether I'm going to have a quorum and whether I dare schedule items for that meeting, or whether I'm definitely not going to put anything that's very controversial on that. It's going to be anything on that I think is going to be straightforward, because I don't think it, you know, at least from what I can tell, it'll be straightforward. Nothing too complicated for that, just because it's not, I mean, because you probably have a lot of folks that aren't in town as well, and so I don't want to have things that are too, you know, too controversial. But my question to you is, you don't have to tell me now, but if you're starting to think about, hey, time I'm taking off, and yep, I'm not going to be here, start letting me know so I don't load that agenda. So, you know, and we can, you know, cancel that meeting or whatever, and you can take time off if you want. But
okay. Well, I'll be here.
Well, as a reminder, I emailed you a couple months ago. I have a scheduling conflict for the next meeting.
Yeah, I have
so
that.
So, I mean, as long as you have a quorum.
Yes, we're good.
Make sure.
Okay.
I think I had previously said I was going to be gone in June, but I'm going to be here. But I'll be gone. I may be gone that 4th of July. The next meeting I may miss. I haven't nailed that down yet. But I think I'm here on the 3rd.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like, you know, we're probably going to have a quorum then. So yep. I just wanted to check, because for sure you guys are like, no, not in town.
I'm going to be gone 3 weeks in September.
Okay.
So right. That's...
We should be done with you on all the general plan stuff by then. We're supposed to be anyway. We'll see.
Can you email us a link for the next module, you know, on the LCP? I haven't been able to find it on the website.
We'll be releasing that at the end of this week.
Okay.
For you, I believe.
Okay.
We just got module 3 back, and we don't have the stuff back on 2, so I might give you that a little bit ahead of time, and then 2 might come later. But we're trying to get it to you, you know, with enough time so you have a little bit of time to review it prior to the weekend. So you have 2 weekends to review it for the next meeting. We are cognizant of that, and we're working our way through that.
So. Okay, great.
I think at the Planning Commissioner Conference, there was one community that was saying they had their things 2 weeks in advance before the meetings, and they didn't understand why anybody couldn't do that.
So. okay, a little discussion here just a minute before we go. You know, I tried to push public, you know, comment, public interaction further forward in the agenda. I don't know how that worked out, you know, or what your guys' thoughts on that, or how we want to set up the agenda so that...
I actually need to go look to make sure that that's not a requirement, that you do them in that order. You have the flexibility to move things around, but to set a fixed agenda, maybe I'll put that on the next agenda item for discussion so I can go do the research, and you don't need to talk about it right now. I'll just put it on there for a discussion item, so I'll have answers for you.
Okay.
As opposed to you coming up with an idea, and then I come back next week and say, no, sorry, you can't do that.
Okay. If there's a better solution, you know, I'm willing to try it. You know, just...
We just, here in Morro Bay, we seem to have a practice of locking everything down, and I can see us having a resolution that sets the format of this.
Yeah.
or it's in the council guidelines, or it's in the planning commissioner guidelines, or those things. I just need to go look. I'm not sure if that exists or not.
I think sometimes we get kind of issues that because we don't have things published till Thursday, it may take a day till somebody even knows something's there. And then we get today we had quite a bit of correspondence come through. And so you get people showing up. And I think if you move the agenda, and then people show up at the wrong time, you know. So I think I'd just be very cautious about it. I appreciate, though, having it up front when we know we're having people want to speak, because nobody wants to be here at 10:30 or 11 o'clock. Right.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the issues sort of came out last time, and I think maybe when we jump into the agenda, if we have items that are like that, that people think are being heard in the full item, but they're not, or we're continuing them, that we know we'll just make a announcement at the front of the meeting so people aren't waiting, because I agree. That was not great.
Yeah.
So that's an easy thing to resolve. If we know we're going to have we're continuing an item, we just announce that at the front just in case anybody didn't get the message. Mm-hmm. Move forward. That's probably the best way to address that.
So, Scott, could we try? I mean, you know, do we need speaker cards or a speaker list or something? Just so we know.
It's not a product.
requirement.
No, it's not. But what I'm saying is that people could state that they're here for this item or this item or this item.
We could do that. I mean, I think the issue that we ran into, though, was simply the fact that that person, they waited until the end and they didn't know. We could have easily resolved that by just saying, oh, and by the way, that item on the agenda is going to be continued. And we could have just said that up front. Yeah. We would have still gone through the process and opened it. And we could tell them, and if you want to wait to provide comment, we'll take public comment when we open that item, but we're not going to hear it tonight. I think that'd probably be sufficient. And I won't forget to do that, so I mean, I don't think it's a problem. If we have that come forward, we'll let everybody know, and that'll stop that from happening.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
One last thing. I just want to say this for the record. Lateral access right there by Verge's Landing, it's been outstanding.
Great. Okay, so we'll adjourn to the next regular Planning Commission meeting at the Veterans Memorial Building, 209 Surf Street, on May 15th, 2018, at 6 p.m. So thank you, everybody.
Oh.